For years, I've been following Avinash Kaushik's insights on how to make sense of marketing data. More than just a data guy, Avinash is an advisor to Fortune 500s, an evangelist for understanding customer behavior, and a pioneer in translating complex analytics into simple, actionable insights, or as he calls them, out of sights. But this isn't just about numbers. It's about seeing the human stories behind those numbers. And for restaurants looking to stand out, attract guests, and really thrive in a competitive market, understanding that story is everything. Today, we'll dig into Avinash's wisdom and chart the most impactful actions restaurants can take to grow, using data as a tool to not only drive decisions, but to hopefully truly connect with their guests.
Welcome to Guest Getter, the best place for restaurateurs to learn the art and science of getting more new guests, getting guests coming back more often, and getting guests spending more per visit so that you can be more profitable and do more of what you love. My name's Kyle Guilfoyle. Let's hit it.
Avinash, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Kyle. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm so excited. This has been brewing for quite some time, at least in my head. So Avinash, you've worked with some of the biggest companies in the world, and I'd love to bring this down to earth for restaurant owners and help them make sense of their data. For an independent restaurant owner, data might seem overwhelming or out of reach. What would you say is the simplest, most impactful starting point for using data to drive real growth for a restaurant?
Yes, of course. There's so many interesting parts. But first, let me give you some context. My wife started a Singaporean restaurant in Cupertino a few years ago. And so I had to use all kinds of data because it's an independent small restaurant of hers just across from the Apple campus in Cupertino. And sadly, it couldn't survive the pandemic. It was just about the year mark and she closed it after the pandemic came in. But as I think about her restaurant, Nanyang Kitchen, and as we geared it up, et cetera, we use data in multiple different ways. Obviously, Kyle, the most important data we used came from the Square system that ran all the menus and the order taking and things like that. So it's an extraordinary amount of data between what we were trying to serve our clients and what they were ordering and how often. And obviously, as a person who works with Fortune 100 companies, I would analyze that for trends and patterns and which menu item where, when to increase prices, so on and so forth. So anyway, one big source of data. The second big source of data, of course, came from our website, because we had a website where people go read our various pages and menus and reviews and make reservations and place corporate orders, because after the first 3 months, we started to accept orders from corporate customers, including one of our early customers was Zoom, just to bring this whole thing together.
Amazing.
In the Silicon Valley, they were good customers of ours. So the second source of data around how could we create the best possible digital presence so we could be found when people were searching in Google Maps or just Google, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, the third large source of data was when we did our organic social and paid social and some little bit of paid local marketing, those data from our various ad platforms, be it Facebook, be it Google, be it other one, Instagram, there was data that was coming around our small, modest budget that we had to do outbound marketing. So those are three big sources of data that we used in order to do our best to be a data-influenced restaurant.
Okay, that's great context. And I read your newsletters, of course, and I imagine you have dashboards that are like the most beautiful things, just works of art. And I'm really curious, did you create some kind of a dashboard for your wife's restaurant, or was it just going into the platforms and looking at the data as it was served up?
Yeah. So once we got seriously going, then we use Looker Studio to pull together various data streams. So it was easier for my wife, the CEO of the restaurant, to have at a glance understanding of various elements of the data. But I wouldn't say, Kyle, it was like super beautiful, like the work I do when I went to work at Google, which is where I worked for 16 years. I think we probably spend more time on data visualization and those kinds of things, because there were significantly more people. But with Looker Studio, even with the built-in simple visualizations, some bar charts, some lines going up and down. Once we were able to pull two or three different streams of data, it allowed my wife at a glance understanding of the restaurant. And of course, you could also pull data around from the order system that allowed her to plan her inventory a little better. Around when did we need this or that product to be ordered, et cetera. The thing I could never get is access to our place. My wife had to log into various systems to place orders for the fish and so on and so forth, chickens and whatnot. I never got access to that data. That would have been nice to have in one place. But the rest of the data, I had a simple Looker Studio report that she could go at a glance, get an understanding of the last few days.
Yeah, that's a common problem. One of the great tools out there today is Margin Edge that plugs into many vendors. And there so that's, go. But I'm really curious. I didn't know that I had this experience in the restaurant space. So this is really interesting. I'm curious, were there any metrics that you found yourself going back to again and again that you found most useful or impactful?
Yes. So in different places, different metrics, right? So from our website, we kept a very close eye on like bounce rate, and we kept a very close eye on, we created some micro conversions because you couldn't like, it's not an ordering website, right? Not our restaurant. But we created a micro conversion for the email sign up because we did an email newsletter. We had one to submit a lead if you wanted to place a corporate order. Then our deeper menu pages, we created a micro outcomes for our top selling product. So got down to the Laksa page and read the recipe or things. That was a good success for us because you came deeper into the site and more likely that you'll come and try our Laksa that we had. And we created a micro conversion for number of people who would click on the address we had and went outbound to Google Maps to look up, create their own directions. So I just give you like four examples. It's been a handful of years. I'm forgetting some. But basically, those were the micro outcomes were the most important KPIs for us because it was a leading indicator that people would show up at the restaurant. Remember, that's the success KPI. Not you visit our website, you show up at the restaurant. So these four micro outcomes, easily configurable in Google Analytics, which is what we used as our tool of choice for the website. That gave us a really good idea of the KPIs we wanted to track. So it just shows up in a nice standard custom report you can create in Google Analytics. Just take a few minutes. Obviously, the first two columns were the number of visitors, users, and the second column was bounce rate, just because we did not want people to just land and leave right away. We wanted them to make at least one more click, get a little deeper into the website. So those two first metrics and then the four micro outcomes were like a handy, quick custom report, keep an eye on it very closely. So that was from the website. Sorry, go ahead.
No, my question was around what your experience was with the newsletter and the impact that you saw from that. But I feel like you were about to say something else.
Yes. So on the platforms, of course, once we started to do a little bit of advertising and a little bit of local search ads inside Google Maps, et cetera, then obviously, Kyle, the metrics we use were the same that you and I would use if we worked for Expedia or American Express. How much money did we spend? What was the cost per impression, cost per click, cost per lead? And then trying to get data from the platforms around which audiences were seeing our ads. Was the performance better or worse for certain kind of ads, certain geo-targeting, et cetera? In that sense, Kyle, the difference was not very big on the advertising side than what you and I, if we worked for Applebee's.com, Applebee's or some other Krispy Kreme, we would probably use the same metrics as a small business on the advertising side. On the advertising side, of course, just the difference is numbers are much smaller. We don't have as much money to do advertising. So you and I could look at every single click and every single bit of dollar going out as a small restaurant. When we work with some larger chains, et cetera, you just aggregate the data. You don't have as much time. So that was the second one. And then on the newsletter, we just used the native metrics that we got from the platforms that we were using. The metrics that I created a custom metric called click to delivery. That was the first one we looked at, of the ones that we sent, how many were delivered, and of the ones that were delivered, how many clicks did I get? And that became like a nice conversion rate metric to keep track of, click to delivery rate. But obviously we would look at opens. Now open rate for emails is not a metric that is very clean. So don't look at your open rate and just freak out if it's 30%, 60, 70, whatever. Open rate is an imperfect metric. Not every platform reports it cleanly, but over time you can compare it. So if you see you're going from 70, 70 to 60 to 50, freak out. I don't really know. 50 to 70 to 72, celebrate. But just don't look at one data point. Just look at the patterns. So we would look at open rate patterns, of course. And then as a small business, again, Kyle, you're operating in much smaller scale. I ran the email newsletter myself, not my wife, who had, of course, as a CEO and head chef, many more things to do. So then over time, I would also keep track of how many people replied and how many people asked questions. Because it's a small business, you're not going to get hundreds of replies. Like my newsletter goes to 60,000 people. I can't keep track of every reply. But for my wife's newsletter, I can easily keep track of replies. So then we would play with the content on the newsletter rather than just content. We would share things around Singapore and cooking and particular ingredients and spend time on this particular type of chili. And people would write back and reply. And that became a very nice, engaging channel for us. So on the newsletter, those were the type of metrics that we kept track of.
And you found the newsletter to be definitely a high impact channel? Was it clear that it was moving the needle, so to speak?
Yes. So what I discovered, and again, restaurants were new to me. I'm used to these hundreds of millions of dollars budget people spend. But for me, one of the key lessons was newsletter was a very good way to build loyalty. I found that actually people who came like once a week or people who had come a handful of times a month, and that they were more likely to be subscribed to the newsletter and they were more likely to reply. They were more likely to engage. And so it became this really great platform, a way to stay in touch with your most loyal customers and actually work on increasing that loyalty. So somebody would reply back to me, say, just they send the newsletter out. They'll reply back to say, we were so glad that you took care of our son. And I'm sorry he was making such a noise and you brought him extra carrots and blah, blah, blah. People just like write back on the newsletter. And I knew like they were there just last night, so on and so forth. So for loyalty, it became a really good channel. And the second one, Kyle, was as we started to be a bit more comfortable with boasting a little bit, because we, both my wife and I are I am at least very introverted. Maybe she's not. I'm a very classic Asian shy people. But after a while, I started to write about, this week's corporate customers are blah, blah. I started to write about menus and things we were delivering to our corporate customers. And we didn't do that for a few months. We were like shy about that stuff. The people who got the newsletter then started to forward that to their companies. And we got a nice uptick in corporate orders, which is something I totally did not expected, not anticipated. But that was like a nice learning because we would make these custom menus. So what we took to Zoom's custom menu was different than what we took to Netflix, et cetera. And so people started to share with their companies and we got a few more corporate customers that way. And there was an interesting use of email marketing for this amplification, which honestly, I will admit going in, I did not think about. In hindsight, wow, of course you should have, but I did not.
That's great. I'd actually love to go back to one thing you said about advertising and what you track. And one of the things you mentioned was cost per lead. And I'd be really curious what you considered what a lead was.
Yeah. So after trying a couple of different things, but initially we were just doing cost per click and sending people to our website or in Google Maps, it would go to your listing, obviously, local listings, etc. But then one of the things I was doing for the Verizon, I was working with Verizon at the same time, spending their tens of millions. For Verizon, I had implemented a lead as the phone call made to the local store. I was like, damn, I didn't know that. So for our restaurant, Nanyang Kitchen, we shifted to the cost per, we did the integration with Google. Mm-hmm. So the lead became the phone call that came to the restaurant. Now, what Google would not know, by the way, is if the phone call converted into a visiting customer who made a reservation or placed a corporate order, so on and so forth. We would not know that. But cost per lead became the people who used Google to search for an ad and then placed a phone call to the store. And we were able to, Google tracks that quite easily. And then after a while, the front couple of folks we had in the front I got used to recognizing that, oh, this is a call coming from Google. And we were able to get a slightly better idea about conversion rate. The person made a reservation, person did not make a reservation, or placed a corporate order, did not place a corporate order. But it was honestly simple integration with Google itself and to the phone call. Obviously, leads could come in different ways, Kyle. So for different restaurants, there are different ways. For some of the larger chains that I've worked with, the cost per lead would be tied back to the online reservation system. So you can Google can track that just nicely and easily. So in which case, you search on Google, you came to the website, you placed an order, whether it is going to service by DoorDash, Uber Eats, whatever, that cost per lead is much more clear, clean. But at the time, we did it on the phone call.
Yeah, I still think phone calls are very, very valuable actions to drive high buying intent. If someone picks up the phone and calls your restaurant, the chances that they're going to follow through and become a guest is very high. And there are also neat gee whiz things we can do. If a restaurant can't answer that phone, which often is the case during a busy service, we can implement a missed call text back system or something like that to engage them over text. So yeah, I love that. And I think that's a great insight, is to play around and test more with those kinds of conversion actions.
Exactly. So, and the thing for our podcast listeners is, look, some of these things are only available and at cost to some of the largest advertisers on the planet. I remember first time implementing call tracking was so expensive for the customer, and at Google, it was such a pain in the ass to implement. But one of the benefits we can take as small advertisers ourselves in a small restaurant, independent restaurant business, if you will, big independent restaurant business, I shouldn't just say small, just relatively speaking, is that these things are now free. Like we can act like just us as an independent business could totally access them at no cost using many of these ad platforms, use Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. So as you said, Kyle, be open-minded and explore what's out there because we can get access to these things for free. Now, for example, Kyle, if I was creating some ads on Google Maps or on Google itself or on YouTube for our locally targeted ads for my independent restaurant today, I would let the ad platforms make the creative for me. I don't need to do that. Spend time, hire a creative designer, et cetera. I just upload a bunch of the photos of the dishes, which we did have for the restaurant, just pump them into Google and Facebook. They will make like a little video and things and all that stuff for free. And they will deliver that to the customers. Now, just a couple of years ago, as an independent restaurant, I would have to spend money doing all that stuff, right? Now, just take advantage of these AI solutions that are there, which you and I can access that even as an independent restaurant, small, medium, or large.
Yeah, 100%. One of the most frustrating things in my experiences is when a client micromanages that creative process, and they're like, no, it's got to be just this and this. And I'm just like, who do you think is smarter in this situation? Like you or the machine, Meta, who like is basically as close to omniscient as we can get. And our role is to feed the machine as much data, as much creative as we possibly can so that it can make the decisions on our behalf. I got to hold myself back here from going on a rant, because it is, I feel like it's the pinnacle of arrogance to be like, no, I know the answer here, when you, like, you don't. And the data will chart the path forward.
Exactly. And to connect two of our threads that we just talked about together, by the way, I'm with you. I'm not precious about my creative. I really am not. I want to make money. Mm-hmm. I'm fine if you use a different shade of pink. I'm totally good with that. You want to cut half of my recipe photo? Happy birthday. As long as people are walking to the door, I'm good. But to bring our two threads together, one of the things I say in these situations to advertisers, big and small, by the way, right? Big and small. Our client Nespresso here in the US, we work with Nespresso very closely, or my wife's restaurant. I say, look, you can imagine Nespresso is precious about their creative. They should be. They're a very big company, right? Mm-hmm. But I say to them, look, I have a tag from Meta on my thank you page. Order confirmation page, right? Or lead page. Let Meta figure out which is the best creative that drives people to give me money. As long as you give them that signal, please, for sake of God, don't be precious. Just take the money. Because they are optimizing creative not based on Meta's feelings. They're optimizing it to you getting money. Just let them do it. Now, obviously, we're not saying we're just going to chuck a creative over the fence and Meta can do whatever the hell they want. No, we're saying please optimize it to the thing that drives the highest conversions. Let them test the 70,000 versions and find the three that works. Why do I need to spend money on that? So I'm with you, Kyle, but bringing these two things together around the cost per lead we were talking about, just help them understand what is success for you. Let them create the build the creative after you uploaded all your recipe photos.
100%. I actually, this is a little on the technical side, but yeah. One thing I'm often wary of when it comes to running ads and optimizing for, say, a pixel conversion on a thank you page, smaller budgets, is I get concerned that it's going to take us too long to get out of the learning phase when you have that sort of that gap between the platform itself and the conversion event that we're optimizing for. And so what I'll tend to do is opt for like using more of the platform's built-in features, whether it's optimizing for a message conversation or optimizing for a lead ad conversion, just to keep things a little bit tighter. I'd love, and I might be totally missing something here. And so I'd just love for your, how you'd approach that.
Yeah, no, I actually, that's a great point to make and a right thing to worry about. In different platforms, when you use these outcome-based optimization, right? So we're using outcomes to optimize a creative, they will tell you upfront what is the ideal number of conversions outcomes that should be happening so that the algorithm can learn. So sometimes some platforms tell you, I need at least 20 conversions per week or 100. They'll tell you upfront. So definitely take that into account. So if you're at 6 a week and they want 20, then Kyle, you're absolutely right. It's going to take you a while to learn. And so you walk one step back and say, okay, it's not the conversion. Can you optimize it to the visit to my site? Oh, no. Go walk one more step back. Can you optimize it to engagement with the ad? Oh, no. Okay, walk back one more step. Can you optimize it to the impression of the ad? Anyway, keep walking back until you're like, I'm getting enough of a signal back to the platform so the algorithm can learn. But usually the platforms are extremely transparent and they'll say to you, we need a minimum number of these many of the thing, whether it's an outcome or engagement or impression, et cetera. And so keep going back. But even if you're just beginning, Kyle, platforms are pretty good at using what we call industry norms to make the creative better. So even on day one, without these things, chances that they will create a better version of your creative for their audience are very high. Not perfect, very high. So please don't make Kyle unhappy and be too precious about your creative because Kyle wants you to succeed. And so Kyle, I'm with you 100%.
It's a great public service announcement right there. Oh man, I actually have one more little curiosity around, do you run quite a few Meta ads? Do you use Meta very much?
Yeah.
I'm
tens of millions of dollars of them.
Okay. And you know how you can just toggle on like AI, all the AI generated
yes.
variations of the copy and whatnot. Are you a fan of those? Do you use those?
Yes. So over the last year, this is the guidance we give to all the people at our agency. It's these big clients that we have, Timberland and Nespresso and all these clients. So we've created this bifurcation, and this may or may not be right for all the restaurant colleagues of ours. But what I say is that, so split brand and performance into two pieces. So for performance advertising, which is a lot of what you and I have been talking about today, over the last year, the capabilities in the platforms around smart bidding, smart targeting, and smart creative, there's three clusters, they are phenomenally good. And the last to arrive on my trust was smart creative. It was the last to arrive. But over the last year, with all the advent of the sophistication in the LLMs, all three of those features we should use if they are allowed in our account. Because honestly, Kyle, the AI is way better than you and I. We're done, right? In those narrow cases, they are better. So I do advocate for checking those features on and using them. Obviously, keep a close eye on the metrics and the reports that you and I spoke about earlier in the podcast. On the brand side, we're doing brand marketing. I still think that doing creative pre-testing with real humans upfront is still better. And then you let the platform optimize it, but for creative concepts and some creative executions, they are not quite there yet, because with persuasion, we're solving such a long-term problem that the AI is still learning. So I've split those into those two pieces for brand, still work in progress, still human powered for me and our clients on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera. But on the performance side, I think we crossed some kind of Rubicon last year. So let it go. We're not testing anything. We're just live optimizing.
And just for to clarify for the audience, when you say brand, you're essentially talking about education, storytelling around what is this brand all about? How do we drive more awareness? And then on the performance side, that's more direct response. Here's an offer. Here's something. And what kind of uptick do we get as a result of that? Do I have that right?
Yeah. A good example is one of our clients is Coach. I was there this morning. They make luxury handbags. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of Coach advertising that we do that is all around performance. Just you're looking for a bag for your spouse, your mom, your friend. How do we get you the best? Make sure Coach shows up as an option. But then we do a whole bunch of advertising around this fundamental belief that Coach has in its platform around unlocking your courage. And we call purposeful brand marketing. And its purpose, its job isn't to sell your purse today. It's a job for the brand to stand for something super meaningful. It drives long-term loyalty, drives long-term revenue. And so the Shine campaign, find your courage, unlock your courage. And the next one we're planning right now, but 4 different years, we've invested in this platform of courage. That is all brand marketing. So this is a very specific example. And by the way, that platform, now that we are 3 years in, is driving a dramatic lift in people walking into Coach stores. So it is driving performance. It just happens over a long period of time. So it's just a different kind of marketing.
And I think it's actually one of my questions. I think it's insanely important for restaurants to do, especially say, for example, you're a Caribbean restaurant in Canada. And there can be a little bit of a disconnect there between the audience and them actually understanding what is Caribbean cuisine exactly. And so that's a brand problem that we need to solve for. The issue with a lot of restaurants is they can't directly, or they don't have the tools to directly translate that brand effort into dollars in the bank. And as a result, they just don't do it. And so I would love for you to help those restaurant owners who know that maybe they have a brand problem, but they don't know how to invest in campaigns or whatever it is to solve that problem. How can we make those efforts more tangible for them?
Actually, that's a great question, Kyle, and something to worry about. My wife opened a Singaporean restaurant, and you know this in Cupertino, it was the first Singaporean restaurant within miles. There were plenty of Malaysian ones and Chinese, of course, tons and tons, but not really Singaporean restaurants. The challenge with brand for a smaller, I'm going to assume like my wife's, it was only one restaurant, so we didn't have a chain or anything. But with that roughly size in Cupertino, California, that you have to be careful about how far you want to go into brand because it can get very expensive. So then how far should you go? Our choice was that what we will talk about our brand, Nanyang Kitchen, our restaurant is, we'll talk about my wife's story and her family and their recipes and why did she open? She's a Chinese person from Hong Kong. Why is she opening a restaurant with a mix of Singaporean, Indonesian cuisine? We worked on building her brand, telling her family story and making sure that we use the newsletter to drip feed things in that circle, if you will. Then there is this wider circle around, can we only serve certain Singaporean dishes? Can we share recipes of other dishes that we don't serve in honor of Singaporean broader cuisine? Singaporean cuisine is huge. And so that's okay. Be careful as you go into the circle because it can be very big. But then there is this larger circle around getting people to understand Singaporean cuisine and Singaporean history and the ethnicities that clash in Singapore and produce amazing flavors. For that, Kyle, we just link to other people because we don't have the time and the money to invest in those stories. And also, it is very hard for our website on Google Maps or Facebook or on our actual website to stand out in Google search queries. Because for these broader areas, like if we were going to write about Caribbean cuisine, the chances that a restaurant in Toronto is going to show up is like 90th page, right? Because that's not what Google is going to say. Google is going to say, oh, here's this authoritative website that constantly talks about Caribbean cuisine. That is some big website, multi-million website that's going to go. So what you have to think about is how far you want to go down that train before you lose the ability to say, this is your story. So talk about yourself, talk about your family, talk about your recipes, talk about your history, talk about how you came to it, your passion. Keep go that, own it. Have it on your website, have it on YouTube, put a podcast out there, write an email. Yes, own all of that. Then get a little bit more into Caribbean cuisine, even if you don't serve those dishes, etc. It's nice fodder content marketing, if you will. But after that, for a broader view, be generous. Link to other people. Say, hey, you like Caribbean cuisine? You might like this YouTuber. You like Caribbean cuisine? Here's a really great place. Or, hey, we keep track of all our recipes using this mobile app. You should use the same. And the generosity to other people solves the problem you're talking about. Well, we don't have to spend money doing it because it can get very expensive. Does it make sense, Kyle?
Yeah, 100%. We can focus on ourselves, but we can also elevate, we can honor, we can, shine a light on other folks that essentially supports our brand mission. I think it makes perfect sense. And when you say you're going to link out to them, do you mean specifically on your website and on your social posts? Would you even run ads that sort of say, hey, we here at this restaurant, blah, 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 and then send them off to there? Would you mind clarifying that a little bit?
So in our use case, in the use cases I'm thinking about, we won't run advertising for it. Mm-hmm. But we will definitely link out or using our Facebook, TikTok, Instagram pages. We will talk about it in our YouTube. We'll definitely talk about it in our email newsletters because we always need good content for it. And maybe even create a page on our website, our favorites kind of thing, and actually have a link out. And it's very generous of us to do that. But running advertising is a difficult proposition to solve. If it turns out that somebody's written or said some content that directly relates to you persuading Torontonians to come to your Caribbean restaurant, and instead of linking to, if it is that important, you've just found something like, hey, this is just going to get more people into my door, even if it's in the third circle of content we talked about, I would recreate it, Kyle. I would create my own. But I want, if I'm doing advertising, those dollars need to lead back to one of my presences. It can lead to my presence on YouTube. It can lead to my website. It can lead to my page on DoorDash. All good. But you got to lead it back because otherwise it's really hard to figure out if that money is being spent on vanity or that money is actually driving people short or long term back into my restaurant. And restaurants are notoriously margin low businesses. So I have to be very careful with every dollar I have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. I'd love to, one thing you speak very eloquently on is about finding the human story in data and seeing people and not just numbers. And so I'd love for you to riff on for restaurant owners, how you'd recommend they start understanding the stories of their guests through data. What should they look at beyond just sales numbers?
Right. So it depends on the channel that you have access to where you can find the data. Look, one of the qualitative things that we used to do is my wife would, of course, engage our regular customers when they came into the restaurant. I would engage them because I would work there Friday, Saturday, Sunday myself, doing the service and taking orders. You get to know people through that. You get a better sense for who's walking in, what are their passions, etc. So I don't want people to ignore the qualitative. I always say it's qualitative, right? So use the qualitative data of people actually walking in through the door and giving you money. So that's very important. But after that, we use the demographics and psychographics report in Google Analytics. It helps us understand ages, it understands location, it understands various information around gender, etc., to begin to form a better profile of people who are coming to our digital presence. And then if you have a YouTube channel, you also have audience insights reports that YouTube free, totally free, that you can use to form a better sense for who is consuming your content. Where are they? What are their ages? What are their things that they're watching, etc. So the YouTube insights tools is very good. There's something similar that you can get for Instagram and Facebook as well, especially if you do advertising with them. they will actually give you a much better sense of the people who are clicking on your ads. For me, the central circle ended up being the people in the restaurant and people replying to emails. Remember, that was one of the big things. And we were small enough, Kyle. So perhaps some of your listeners have such big restaurants and such big mailing lists that they can't, but we were able to. So qualitative is the first circle. And then the next bigger circle is our website data. And the third bigger circle is data from our ad platforms. Each of them have different versions of audience insights that we can tap into.
That's great. And I've been really curious. I have just a couple more here. I want to respect your time. I have a colleague who he works in operations for a big restaurant group. And I've heard him say many times, he just feels like marketing is a waste of money. And so say you're a CMO of a restaurant group overseeing many brands, and you basically have to justify your efforts or even your existence to the CFO, the CEO, the whole board. How would you recommend approaching that challenge?
So look, I'm a marketing evangelist. So my answer comes a bit biased. I think anybody who says that marketing is a waste of money hasn't quite been exposed to sophisticated marketing, right? So it's our job to educate them and inform them, but that's not a wise opinion to have. Okay, so if we were working with a big restaurant chain, I don't know why I'm thinking of Krispy Kreme today. I need to go eat some donuts. But anyway, so somebody published this article for one of my keynotes, and they say the best marketing is the one that solves for the CFO, not the CMO. And by that, I simply mean that when you spend money on marketing, you have to bring the incrementality mindset to bear. For example, Kyle, if you and I were responsible for running paid search media for a large restaurant chain with local ads, okay, not national, local ads, geofence, we would actually set that up as CLS. Conversion lift studies, which are true test and control experiments that Google will do for free. Wow. That will allow you to go to your CFO and said, we spent $10,000 on paid search ads on Google last month, last week, whatever. And of those, these were the truly incremental visits we got to our site or our store. And this is the cost per incremental sale. Those two came. Word I is really important. So bring the incrementality mindset, because on Google, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, you can set up your campaigns to run on incrementality, which means you would not have gotten this conversion any other way except through advertising. That's a very high standard to set. So bring that mindset to bear. Second, if you are not a big chain and you still want to do advertising, pick the right success KPI. Kyle, you and I, the first thing we talked about was cost per lead. We did not talk about cost per visit. We did not talk about cost per impression. We did not talk. So when advertising is wasted, it uses an activity metric for measurement instead of an outcome metric for measurement. And today, consistently through our podcast, I think your listeners will get a sense that we have talked about outcomes-based metrics, not activity-based metrics, right? Even when we were optimizing the creative, right? It's outcome-based metrics. So if you think marketing is not working for your company, please double check that you're not using vanity metrics or activity-based metrics, because those are harder to justify to a CFO. But if you have some kind of outcome, including a lead submitted, including those micro conversions that I talked about at the very beginning, a CFO will be a lot more open-minded about it. And then the last tip I'll give is, always focus on efficiency and effectiveness. So don't just say, I have delivered 30 visits to the restaurant in the last 24 hours. Say, that is an effectiveness metric. 30 is effectiveness. To say, I have delivered 30 visits to our restaurant yesterday at the cost per visit of 50 cents. Boom. Now you're in love. You're like, man, that is amazing. Now, and by the way, you take that to your CFO, they're going to kiss you right away. Because that is fantastic, right? Effectiveness and efficiency. But if you say, I got 30 leads, it cost me $40 per visit, then pack your bags. But it's the balance. So if you use these three tips to go to your CMO, and as a CMO, you take those three approaches to your CFO, you will find that you will get money for marketing because you're focused on outcomes, not activity. And that's good for your company. That's good for your customers.
That's so good. And so for conversion lift studies, I think that's key. And also incrementality. Incrementality is one of my favorite words that I learned from you. And because it overcomes a big problem for us marketers is a lot of folks, they think that marketing is going to move mountains for them and solve their problems, all their problems right away. But it actually, it's incremental. It's you're planting seeds and sometimes those seeds take a while to blossom or whatever it is. And so I think that the incrementality mindset helps us live in reality as opposed to some sort of delusion. And it's the delusion that, and it's that mismatch between reality and delusion that causes a lot of restaurants just stop. They just stop advertising because they can't make sense of it. And then they just shoot themselves in the foot. And so I've actually never done a conversion lift study and that's new to me. So do I just go on Google and look up conversion lift study? Okay, perfect. That's amazing.
Yeah, in your AdWords Google Ads on the fifth or seventh menu, it'll say lift measurement. And that's the phrase to look for. If you don't have it, you just try to Google to activate it for you. But that's a really good way. And again, because every visit is incremental, and we can measure cost per incremental visit, that's a way to justify and say marketing is good and that it is driving the outcomes that we want as a restaurant to continue to be profitable and grow.
Great. Okay, I have one more and then a round of rapid fire questions. Is that okay, Avinash?
Sure.
Okay. I'm really curious, where would you recommend restaurants look to find better results and efficiencies or effectiveness in marketing over the next, say, 1 to 3 years? Is there anything you're like really, you got your sort of eye on the prize, excited about?
So for me, the three things we talked about early are the place where you will increasingly see more and more sophistication, which is smart bidding. How much should I pay to show an ad? Smart targeting. Who should see my ad? And smart creative. What should they say in my ad? These are three areas in which, at the moment, literally billions of dollars are being invested to make them better and better. So things like PMax, Advantage Plus, these platforms on Facebook and Google, I am very excited about what they are doing to advance those three areas. How much should you pay for your ad? Who should see your ad? And what should be in the ad? So those three things are very important. And the second thing that I'm super excited about is just the whole idea of let's go measure, report, and look at metrics data. A lot of this getting automated by things like incrementality measurement. That's great. I'm really excited about it because, and it will be available to more and more people, more and more countries over time, because that means that my campaigns can automatically be optimized to incrementality. Not every platform is optimized to incrementality, but I'm really looking forward over the next 12 months for bid to incrementality becoming standard. Because Kyle, after that, you and I can pack up and go home. No more work for you and I to do.
Awesome. All right, Avinash, this has been so good. Thank you so much. Okay, are you ready for just a really quick, random, rapid-fire round of questions? Okay, what's your favorite drink?
Well, sparkling water. I drink a lot of sparkling water, but if you ask my team here in New York, they will say sugar-free Red Bull. They always have sugar-free Red Bull, no matter which office I'm working in.
What book have you gifted the most?
Ah, Good to Great. I tend to do a lot of business circle things. Good to Great, still 15, 20 years later, remains a book that I give to all kind of business owners, whether they're in big companies or small companies. It's a really great way to understand how to build a business that sustains.
Awesome. Who inspires your work the most?
My audience. I write a newsletter every week, and it's a paid newsletter. There's a free one every 5 weeks. I've written two best-selling books, but the common theme is that I never write to make money. All of the money I make from my writing is donated to charities, which is about $1.8 million so far. And so I like to wake up every day and say, what else can I learn today that I can then write about so more people will sign up for my newsletter? So I have more money to donate to my charity. So it ends up being like this fulfilling circles. I think my audience inspires me to work harder every day. And obviously, if my wife Jenny is listening, she is the greatest thing in my life. She inspires me to be better.
Amazing. What resource or mentor has had the biggest impact on you?
Oh, I've had so many. I stand on the shoulders of giants. Bonita Stewart used to be my manager for a few years at Google, and she taught me how to be a much better people leader. than I had ever been. And she's been a key inspiration for me in my life. My friend Tom and I worked together at Intuit, and his technical this savvy, the way he thinks about solving problems at scale, I've rarely come across anyone else as good as Tom, and he's inspired me. One of my mentors is Victor Cho. He is a leader that operates in super complex environments and has taught me how to do that better. Oh, I have a list of like 20 people. I'll stop at three.
Okay. Three more really quick. If you could have one message on a billboard, what would it be? Stole that
suck
from Tim
less
Harris.
Every day. Suck less what? Every day.
Suck less every day?
Yes. This is so the secret wise to success. Just be a little better every single day.
So wise. What's your favorite tool right now? You got a favorite tool?
Actually, my favorite tool right now is GPT-4. I do so much with GPT-4, from planning my vacations to building graphics to finding the answers. That GPT-4, I think, is a tool that is my favorite at the moment.
Yeah, it's incredible. And finally, is there anything I should have asked you that you feel would benefit the listeners that I did not?
No, I always think that I'm in awe of people who open restaurants. Having lived through my wife's restaurant, I learned that how hard the work is, how difficult it is to make a restaurant thrive, and everything that goes into it. And sometimes to some people who are thankless and underappreciative. So I just want to express just a deep admiration and deep gratitude for people who open independent restaurants. They're doing God's work by bringing us nourishment and putting their passion into something that we eat. And I wish that more people would appreciate it and express gratitude, because it's such a difficult job to own a restaurant.
And it really enriches the locales, the community, the economy. It really goes far beyond just food and drink. It's a high impact thing that, yeah, I agree, does not get the recognition it deserves. Ash, thank you so much for your time. This was so good. I really enjoyed our conversation.
You're very kind. Thank you for having me, Kyle.
You're welcome. Where should people go to learn more, to connect with you? Where would you like to send folks?
Just type Avinash into Google. They can sign up for my newsletter. There's a free one. I'll send you a link so the restaurant owners can sign up for the free one. It comes out every 5 weeks. It'll have very bleeding edge marketing and analytics knowledge.
Amazing newsletter. And I recommend it. I forward many of them to folks. And if you are a CMO, just pay the 10 bucks a month, like, for the paid newsletter. It will help you immensely. So Avinash, thank you. Thank you for the work that you do. And thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Guest Getter Podcast, where we help you turn visitors into regulars and regulars into raving fans. If today's episode sparked any questions or ideas about growing your restaurant, why not drop us a line? Text us at 778-400-4915 and let's start a conversation about growing your restaurant and taking it to the next level. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and keep playing offense. Until next time, cheers.